Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, August 15, 2020. Almost ready to roll. Work is nearly complete Friday at the intersection of Golf Course and Midkiff Roads as crews repave the area and load dirt to be removed from the construction site. Transportation, Midkiff Golf Course Roads intersection set to reopen. By Mary Deeren, M-D-E-A-R-E-N at MRT.com. The Midkiff and Golf Course Roads intersection will be reopened to traffic by Wednesday after being closed for about 5 months for major reconstruction, according to a press release from the city spokeswoman. Minor lane closures will remain on Midkiff Road for another week as final utility adjustments are made. Unplanned emergency work started in March to replace a collapsed wastewater manhole in the intersection. Investigation revealed that additional manholes and pipes, some as deep as 17 feet, were also in need of immediate replacement. This work included the replacement of large, antiquated storm drain pipes that were next to a similar section replaced under Midkiff Road several years ago, according to the release. The work performed combined water, wastewater, storm drain, paving, pedestrian, and traffic rehabilitation projects that would normally have occurred over several years. This includes new Graffa Park storm drain outlets, underground traffic signal replacements, updating sidewalk access to modern standards, and temporary utility rerouting to keep adjacent areas in service. The intersection was repaved in concrete to increase the life of the road and improve surface drainage. Numerous contractors participated throughout the course of this emergency repair project, with a total city investment exceeding $1.5 million, according to the release. Politics. Big Spring Council okays mayor recall election. Two other council members also face recall elections. By Caitlin Randall. See Randall at MRT.com. Big Spring. The Big Spring City Council on Thursday unanimously approved holding a special election in November to vote on recalling Mayor Shannon Thomason, with Thomason himself voting in favor of the election. The emergency meeting followed a petition to recall the mayor initiated by a resident on July 28. In the petition request, a resident alleged verbal abuse and harassment by Thomason towards city employees. Thomason denied the allegations in an open letter on his Facebook page and said he did not take the petition personally and viewed it as similar to an employee review process. "If the citizens want me out, they'll vote me out, and I'm absolutely fine with that," he said in the post. "If they want me to continue the job I've started, I will happily do so for as long as they want me to, or until the charter requires me to step down." Thursday's city council meeting lasted less than 10 minutes, including a public hearing before a vote was taken. Only one resident, Santero Flores, spoke during the hearing, and he questioned the motives of those who signed the petition and the other council members. "Did he, Thomason, commit some kind of crime that I don't know about or something?" he said. "Or is it because somebody doesn't like him?" Flores encouraged city council members to rise above what he described as drama and vote against a special election unless they could offer evidence to substantiate the allegations against Thomason. "I voted for him," Flores said. "I feel that my vote means something, and if somebody's going to remove the person I elected mayor, I think I deserve an explanation why." There was no discussion on a motion to hold a special election on recalling Thomason's seat before the members in attendance approved the motion unanimously. Councilman Doug Hartman did not attend the meeting. Thomason is the third city council member to face recall in November, following earlier petitions to remove Camilla Strand and Jim DePaul. Two other council positions will also be on the ballot in November, creating the possibility 5 out of 7 seats may change. Tensions have escalated over the last 2 months since 4 council members walked out of a meeting on June 23 after Thomason declared a proposed resolution to be out of order. DePaul called the mayor's actions tyranny in an interview with KBEST News. Strand and DePaul were the first to walk out of the meeting, and 2 days later, residents initiated petitions to recall the council members. On August 3, the council approved an election to vote on recalling DePaul, and on August 11, the council also approved an election to vote on recalling Strand. After a petition to recall a mayor or city council member is requested by a resident, at least 10% of registered voters must sign the petition for it to move forward, according to the election code. From there, once the petition is verified by the city clerk, the election code states the official has 5 days to resign or the city council will vote on a recall election. If one or more of the officials are voted out of office in November, their seats would be vacant until a special election in May. Energy. Oil prices hold above $42 a barrel, by Mella McEwen. M. McEwen at MRT.com. After nearing a five-month high with a $1 gain Wednesday, crude prices retreated as the week came to an end, weakened by rising concerns about a resurgence of the novel coronavirus and its impact on global economies, as well as the postponement of talks between the U.S. and China this weekend to review progress on their Phase 1 trade agreement. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange fell 23 cents, or 0.5%, to close at $42.01 a barrel. The posted price ended the week at $38.50 a barrel. Despite 2 days of decline that eroded Wednesday's jump, prices recorded a 1.9% gain for the week. Oil remained in the low 40s despite tensions with Iran and a decrease in crude oil inventories. Ed Longenecker, president of the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association, told the Reporter-Telegram by email, "We will likely continue to see the same pricing scenario play out through the rest of the year due to a slow recovery in demand and domestic output, among other factors." Natural gas prices on the NYMEX continue to find strength, surging 17 cents Friday to close at $2.35 per MCF, up from $2.15 at Monday's close. "I'm much more bullish on natural gas due to a likely inventory decline on a year-over-year basis, collapsed production and rising power demand," Longenecker wrote. "I think we will continue to see natural gas trade higher over the next 2 quarters. Energy. U.S. rig count decline continues. U.S. tally is 244, Permian has 117, by Mella McEwen. M. McEwen at MRT.com. The nation's rig count continues to seek a bottom as the tally reached yet another historic low. The oil field services firm Baker Hughes said Friday the U.S. rig count fell 3 rigs to 244 this week, the 14th record low seen this year, and far below the previous low of 404 recorded in 2016. Friday's count is 677 rigs, or a 74% plunge from the 935 at work this time last year. The number of rigs drilling for oil dropped by 4 to 172, while the number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose by 1 to 70. Texas led the week's decline, dropping 4 to 100 rigs at work in the state. New Mexico was the only other producing state to report a decline, dropping 1 rig to 45. Louisiana was the only producing state to report a gain, rising 2 rigs to 31. In the Permian Basin, the number of rigs fell 5 to 117, 324 rigs below the 441 at work last year. Still, the area is home to over half the nation's active drilling rigs. Eddy County, New Mexico, was the most active county in the Permian Basin with 26 rigs, unchanged from last week. Martin County was the second most active with 20 rigs, a gain of 2 from last week. Martin County was the only Permian Basin county to record a gain. Lee County, New Mexico had 19 rigs, down 1 for the week. Loving County reported 13 rigs at work within county lines, unchanged from the previous week, while Midland County dropped a rig to 11. Midland Memorial Lab scientists celebrate 60 years on the job. Ann Johnson said her greatest joy is knowing she's helping people. By J.C. Lewis. jc.lewis@hurstmp.com. Midland Memorial Hospital clinical laboratory scientist Ann Johnson poses Thursday at her home in Midland. Johnson celebrated her 60th work anniversary on Tuesday at MMH. Her niece sent her flowers to celebrate. Midland Memorial Hospital clinical laboratory scientist Ann Johnson has turned her job into her hobby, she said. Johnson switched from working full-time to part-time 2 years ago and continues to love her work, she said. It's the only thing I want to do, she said. I love putting the tubes in the machine and looking at the results, reporting them out and calling the doctors or nurses. I feel like it is a help to the patients, and that's my greatest joy, to know that I am doing something to help somebody. Johnson's 60th anniversary of working at MMH was Wednesday, her day off. Her co-workers celebrated the milestone on Tuesday with a cake in the shape of 60. Because of the coronavirus pandemic, the celebration had a different look. Johnson's co-workers lined up outside the break room to celebrate and then received cake one at a time when they took their lunch break. About making it to her 60th work anniversary, Johnson said she is grateful, grateful, grateful. I'm so grateful and thankful for the people that I work with. I couldn't do it without them. They are so helpful. Johnson knew she wanted to be a laboratory tech before she knew what a laboratory tech actually was. When she was 13 years old, she heard the job name and decided that is what she wanted to be. I had no idea what it was at first, but the more I learned about it, the more I learned that's what I wanted to be, she said. I didn't know how I was going to become one, but I knew I had to have a science degree. Johnson grew up in Reform, Alabama. Her parents didn't have any formal education, but her father was determined that his children would be educated. He saved money when he could to buy land, accumulated 900 acres around Alabama to log and pay for his children's education. The timber from that land paid for our college education, she said. Johnson moved to Midland in 1960 after graduating from Tuskegee University with a bachelor's degree in chemistry. Shortly after moving here, she married Lorenzo C. Johnson, whom she met while in college. The couple had three children. Two are still living. Her daughter lives in Midland and looks after her dutifully. Johnson, who is a widow, is involved with Ebenezer Missionary Baptist Church, where she serves as secretary for mission and for the choir in which she sings. Johnson said she was the first black student to attend Midland Memorial's Med Tech School, which was on the hospital's premises. She said the late Dr. Viola Coleman helped her get into the school, where she later taught. I have taught many students and I've gained lots of friendships, she said, and I have seen many, many changes over the years. She said the hospital and technology have changed, but the people have stayed the same. The hospital has grown. It's much bigger and the work has grown, she said. The technology has improved and changed a lot. The people are about the same. They are friendly and helpful. Average gas price remains below $2 in Midland. By Stuart Doreen. Sdoreen at HearstMP.com. The average price for gasoline in Midland crept closer to the state average this week, according to AAA Texas. The organization reported that while the average across the state rose 2 cents to $1.87, the average that drivers are paying in Midland remained the same, $1.99. Midland again ranked third among the largest metropolitan areas in terms of the average price of gas. El Paso again led all 27 communities with an average of $2.02, down 4 cents week over week. Odessa's average fell 3 cents to $2.01. The only other communities with averages at or above $1.90 were Corpus Christi, $1.91, and Abilene and Texarkana, each at $1.90. The cheapest gas prices in Texas were found in Lubbock and Amarillo, each at $1.79. As regional markets readjust to lower than average demand levels, we expect to see continued pump price fluctuation, stated AAA Texas spokesman Daniel Armbruster in a press release. This is primarily due to market forces trying to balance supply and demand. Across the region, other averages reported included $1.85 in San Angelo, an increase of 1 cent. The price increased in Lubbock by 1 cent, in Amarillo by 5 cents, and in Abilene by 10 cents, according to AAA Texas. Drivers in Midland are paying 60 cents less than during the same time last year. The average across the state is down 51 cents year over year. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. This week, El Paso, $2.02. Odessa, $2.01. Midland, $1.99. Corpus Christi, $1.91. Texarkana, $1.90. Abilene, $1.90. State average, $1.87. National average, $2.17. Last week, El Paso, $2.06. Odessa, $2.01. Midland, $1.99. Texarkana, $1.91. Corpus Christi, $1.88. State average, $1.85. National average, $2.18. Fourth COVID-related death in 2 days reported by city, by Stuart Doreen. SDoreen at HurstMP.com. The City of Midland reported a man in his 80s died Friday, the 53rd COVID-related death involving a resident of Midland County during the pandemic. The man had underlying health concerns and was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital, according to the city. He is the fourth county resident to die as a result of coronavirus in the past 2 days, and the 10th this month, according to Reporter-Telegram records. Manor Park, fourth resident dies during pandemic. Manor Park reported Friday that an 88-year-old resident of its Helen Greathouse Manor assisted living facility died Friday because of coronavirus-related issues. Our hearts go out to the family and friends of our resident, as well as our employees who provided his care, Manor Park officials stated in a press release. Since the pandemic started, 17 Manor Park residents have tested positive for COVID-19. 9 residents have recovered, 4 residents died, and 4 remain in the COVID-19 isolation area. During the same time period, 34 employees have tested positive for COVID-19, according to Manor Park officials. 23 employees have recovered and returned to work. 1 employee died, and 10 employees remain isolated at home and will not return to work until clear to do so, Manor Park officials stated. City, 43 new cases reported. The Midland Health Department reported Friday there were 43 new cases, bringing the total for the week to 297 and the total during the pandemic to 2,888. The new cases are reflective of lab results from Thursday and Friday, according to the health department. There are 947 isolated cases, 1,362 recoveries, and 381 under investigation, and 145 unable to locate, refused. Coronavirus report this week. Cases Monday, 84. Cases Tuesday, 112. Cases Wednesday, 41. Cases Thursday, 17. Cases Friday, 43. Cases this week, 297. Total number of cases, 2,888. Odessa healthcare professionals prepare to balance more cases. By J.C. Lewis. jc.lewis@hurstmp.com. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravanan said Friday, it is important for children to be in school, and as healthcare providers, they have to be prepared for an increase in cases when school starts. Kids need to be in school. They need the education, everything that school provides. It has more to do than just the educational aspect. It affects the economy. It affects the social statuses within our community, he said. It affects so many different parts of our community. It is important to get them back to school the safest way possible, which is why we have all these protocols and the phase-in. Even those going back, there will be masking, social distancing, plexiglass, and face shields in place. They are going to take every precaution. We have to temper the rise of these cases over the next few weeks as schools open, because we have to balance the importance of kids being back in school with the increase in the disease we are going to see because they are back in school, he said. Saravanan said there are a lot of mixed emotions because they want to see the kids back in school, but there will be an increase in cases. Dr. Tim Benton echoed that and said whatever happens, protocols need to be adapted at schools to reduce the spread of the virus. Ector County ISD reported Friday that 3 more faculty members tested positive for coronavirus on Thursday evening. The new cases are from New Tech Odessa, Hayes Elementary, and Milam Elementary. The Milam employee has not been on campus since August 5, according to a press release from the district. The Wilson and Young Middle School staffer, who was listed as a positive case, mistakenly received a positive report, according to the release. The total number of lab-confirmed positive cases reported to the district since August 5 is 10, according to the release. MCH reports 44th coronavirus-related death. Medical Center Health System on Friday reported its 44th coronavirus-related death, according to a press release. The patient, a 59-year-old woman from Odessa, died Thursday evening. She was admitted to a medical center hospital on July 13 and had pre-existing conditions. MCH currently has 23 coronavirus patients. Habitat success story number 164. Midland Habitat for Humanity dedicated its 164th home August 6. The house at 814 Cy Wagner Circle was built for Chris Harris and her sons, 9 and 11. The project was sponsored by Concho, and in-kind gifts were provided by Cherokee Rental, City of Midland, Dow Chemical, Hunter Douglas, Friends of the Library, Midland Quilters Guild, Permian Basin Needle Arts Chapter of Embroiderers Guild of America, Valspar Paint, Whirlpool Appliances, Yale Lock, M&M Disposal, ASCO, and United Rentals. Obituaries. Charles E. Koch. Charles E. Koch of Midland passed away on August 11, 2020, at the age of 91. He was born on December 10, 1928, the middle of five sons, born to Kathleen Long Koch and Ferdinand A. Koch. He spent his growing up years in Santa Fe, New Mexico, before enrolling as a teenager in the New Mexico Military Institute in Roswell. Charles graduated from NMMI Junior College with a commission as second lieutenant in the Armored Cavalry in May 1949. He then attended Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois, where he received his Bachelor of Business Administration degree, graduating in January 1952. He returned to Santa Fe and spent 3 years working with his father in the family business. In 1955, Charles moved to Lubbock, Texas to work as a landman for Staniland Oil and Gas Company. While in Lubbock, Charles met June Ellen Wiley of Lockney, Texas, who was attending Texas Tech, and they were married in August 1959. Charles and June adopted two children, Christian in 1961 and Gretchen in 1964. Charles was predeceased by his wife, June, in September 1980, and by his son, Chris, in March 1992. His daughter, Gretchen, survives him, currently residing in California. Charles was transferred to Staniland's office in Midland in April 1964, and in 1967, he joined the firm of Major, Geibel, and Forster as land manager. In 1970, Charles joined Ross D. Roberts and Jack C. Cartwright in an oil and gas exploration partnership, and over the ensuing years, the company developed many successful prospects in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Arizona, and Louisiana, and ended their partnership in 2000. Charles married Jane Daniloff Wyant on January 19, 1985, and inherited from that union Jane's five children, and soon thereafter, 11 grandchildren and four great-grandchildren. In addition to Jane, Charles is survived by Catherine Kearns of Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and her two children, Matthew and Carolyn, by Michelle Jennings of Plano, Texas, and her four children, Stephen, Lauren, Kristen, and Adrian, by Gregory B. Wyant and his wife, Ellen of Redmond, Washington, and their three children, Ellie, Gregory, and Rebecca, by Monica Bates and her husband, Brent Bates of Midland, Texas, and their two sons, Evan and Zachary, and by Jennifer Hill and her husband, Will Hill of Burney, Texas. In addition, Charles is survived by two brothers, James Jamie H. Koch, and his wife, Nene of Santa Fe, along with their two children, Amy and Julie, and by William Christian, Chris, Koch, and his wife, Jean Alice, of Sedgwick, Maine, along with their son, Charles. Diane Woods and Domingo Magana have worked faithfully in the Koch home for over 30 years, and Jane and Charles have gratefully regarded them as part of their family. Charles loved and participated in many sports, team and individual, and while he was never a significant achiever, he nevertheless loved them all, including fly fishing, snow skiing, bird hunting, and golf. In his younger days, he enjoyed dancing, and he found Las Vegas to be a particularly exciting adventure. Charles, like all his family, loved travel, and many happy memories came out of those numerous destinations and occasions. He was passionate about the sport of swimming and threw himself into the administration and governance of the sport at the local, state, and U.S. Olympic level. He was a champion for helping to develop the Maybe Aquatic Center and Calm Aquatics, Incorporated of Midland, Texas. Over the past 15 months, Charles has been cared for by the nursing staff at the Village at Manor Park Vogel Center and Maybe Health Care Center, and by the caregivers of Hospice of Midland. The family is deeply grateful for your compassion and excellent care of Charles. Charles was a member of St. Anne's Catholic Church. A private family memorial service will be held this week. A celebration of his life to include his many friends will be held in the future after COVID-19 health safety precautions have been relaxed. Memorial gifts may be directed to Calm Aquatics Incorporated, 3003 North A Street, Midland, Texas, 79705. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Paula Wayne Rodriguez. Paula Wayne Rodriguez, 80, of Midland, passed away Thursday, August 13, 2020. She was born April 22, 1940, in Big Spring, Texas, to Andrea Lopez and Manuel Rodriguez. Funeral services will be held Tuesday, August 18, 2020, at 1 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park, with burial to follow. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, August 14th, 2020. County Details Data Discrepancy by Michael Merlot. County Commissioner Eddie Shelton said that the Ector County Health Department has received many calls regarding county COVID-19 data not matching the state data during a Friday hospital briefing. The discrepancy is that the numbers reported by the county are the most accurate and updated information, he said, adding that the discrepancy is also happening in other counties in Texas. Shelton said that the numbers from the state are backlogged due to being short-staffed. Go with the number from the county, he said. It's accurate. We are working with the state to make those numbers match. The ECHD website detailed Friday that out of 3,771 total positive cases, 2,547 are confirmed positives, 1,224 are probable positives, and 740 cases are listed as active. While 2,972 people have reportedly recovered from the virus, 59 Ector County residents have reportedly died from COVID-19-related complications. Medical Center Hospital Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said that MCH has 23 positive COVID-19 patients in the hospital. 11 are in the critical care unit, 6 are on ventilators, and 12 are on the 8 central isolation unit. 20 tests are reportedly pending. She added that 2 patients are from Pecos, 2 are from Fort Stockton, 3 from Deering's Nursing Home, 1 is from Seagraves, and 1 from Monahans. Odessa Regional Medical Center Hospital President Stacy Brown said that out of 2,236 tests, 363 people have tested positive. 5 patients are reportedly in the hospital, 4 are in the ICU with 3 patients on ventilators, and 1 test is pending. As multiple ECISD educators tested positive for COVID-19 in the first week back at school, ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan said that the healthcare community has to prepare for an increase in cases. We have to balance the importance of kids being back in school with the increase in the disease that we're going to see because they are back in school, he said. He added that it is not only a worry that educators would get sick, but also parents who may get the virus from transmission. Dr. Timothy Benton also spoke on school opening. This is a respiratory virus spread by people gathering close to each other. So whatever we do, school, we need to adapt those protocols to limit the spread. Saravanan said that the school district is looking to the healthcare community for guidance on community spread. When we tell them this is the new positivity rate and we see the positivity rate is going up, when we tell them the hospitalization rate is going up and we're starting to get stressed with our ICU beds, our ventilators, that would be concerning for them, and they would probably choose to slow down at that time, he said. Saravanan was asked about a drug being used to treat COVID-19 patients in Houston called RLF-100. That specific drug is a synthetic human vasoactive intestinal peptide. It's again a very, very new formulation. Vasoactive intestinal peptides are known to us. We have used it for critically ill patients in the past, and it may help very, very critically ill patients. But again, it's a new drug, and they're still doing the initial results, he said, adding that the NIH still doesn't recommend RLF-100 as a mainstay of treatment. The next hospital briefing will be at 3 p.m. Monday, and hospital officials said that as cases decrease, meetings starting next week will be on Mondays and Thursdays. University turns its eye to new media and photo by Ruth Campbell. The University of Texas Permian Basin is turning a lens toward new media and digital photography this fall. Amy Kim, director of the Nancy Fife Cardozier Gallery and lecturer in art, said the courses are being revived in conjunction with the new dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, Scott McKay. He does have a plan and a vision for our digital arts program, which would include photo, video, graphic design, and animation game design. So it's just kind of a beginning point, Kim said. She added that she will be teaching the photo portion. UTPB was planning to hire more design instructors, but then COVID-19 hit and everything was put on hold in terms of hiring new people. What has occupied Kim this summer is organizing a new studio classroom where students can shoot in a studio setting with light kits. They can do projection design and investigate new technologies that are used in art nowadays. I don't think there's a lot of new media instruction in our region yet, but it's a part of the curriculum in a lot of other schools, so it was time to start it, and we're excited about that, Kim said. New media, she said, can be a lot of things. It involves videos, video art, and projection art, for example. If projection art became a reality at UTPB, Kim said they could project artwork onto Stonehenge's surface. She said there are artists who create similar work within a gallery space indoors. It's a different mode of working than just the traditional genre of painting, drawing, or printmaking. It's using new technology, new software, cameras, and even a lot of internet components. Online imagery can be used, or students can combine those things. Students will be able to combine their skills and create interactive works of art. I am really very excited to start these initiatives at UT Permian Basin at our art program, she added. The current plan is to meet face-to-face once a week while maintaining social distancing guidelines. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidelines will be followed and masks required. Usually we meet twice a week, so once a week we will do face-to-face and learn how to use our space, and then a lot of the installation, you're telling a story with a space, with a 3D space. The next time we will probably meet remotely using our online platforms, she said. Kim said three of her students, Ashley Hernandez, Mandy Casey, and Ruby Chavez, have excelled in her photo courses. Hernandez is an art major whose work was recently juried into the nationally recognized photography exhibition, The Curated Fridge, https://www.thecuratedfridge.com. Her work is showcased along mainstream photographic artists in the U.S. in their summer shows. Hernandez also is the first prize winner in the student category of Insight 2020, the annual Permian Basin juried art exhibition at the Ellen Knoll Art Museum. K Casey is an art major, and her photograph, Harsh Reality, was juried into Insight 2020, the annual Permian Basin Juried Art Exhibition at the Ellen Knoll. Chavez is a political science major, and her still life entitled Ruby won Best in Show in UTPB's Spring 2020 Juried Student Exhibition. The students' success is quite gratifying, Kim said. She added that she is proud of the students because they had never taken a photo course before and didn't know how to use a camera with manual controls. This is the first time for these three students, Kim said. They learned how to use the camera and then how to express their personal vision. There's a difference between photography as an art form and commercial photography. In the art classes, that's what we try to focus on. Personal expression or expression of ideas. Student ideas. It could be identities, race, gender, identify. It could be another philosophical investigation. It could be an aesthetic investigation, but what I try to do in these classes is foster individual vision as opposed to commercial work, Kim said. Once they learn the skills and techniques, they can do wedding photography or sports. It's very transferable that way. But in the courses, we try to focus on critical thinking, personal vision, and in my classes, there's reading. We watch a lot of artist videos, and we look at a lot of artwork by artists, and I think that is very important to keep exposing the students to just various practices by a diverse body of artists, Kim said. She added that the classes are open to non-art students as well. I think that's important, that it's open and you don't need prior experience, Kim said. You don't need a camera. It's provided. You can bring your own camera. The equipment is provided. We have lighting kits, cameras, tripods, so they need to buy their own paper, but that's probably the only expense, and their storage drive if they want to store the images. But the cameras are provided and the equipment is provided, Kim said. Hernandez said this was the first photo course she had taken and she was pretty excited to participate, especially with a new professor. It's so rewarding when you get that email back about your work getting accepted in. For me, I love to submit to as many shows as I can, so I can have feedback from outside sources about what I'm doing. Having a broader audience helps with exposure and learning about what works, Hernandez stated in an email. Photography is something she is actively pursuing with additional courses like New Media this fall. Hernandez stated that she is looking forward to learning more in the future. I would love to get my Master of Fine Arts in Photography New Media, she said. Chavez said she had taken art courses before, but never a photo course. So when she saw that UTP was offering it, she signed up for it right away. The shows were one of the most interesting part of the course. There were so many different artists who expressed their work in unique ways. This allowed me to self-reflect in what I would call my own niche, and found myself diving fully into the course and the potential of what I saw in these shows. Being in the show was compelling. If I had any questions, I would call Ms. Kim, and she would give me ideas on how to best showcase my work, Chavez stated in an email. Even though I am not an art major, I do believe that I will be taking other photo or media courses in the future. Ms. Kim is an exceptionally talented person and seemed to know what she was doing during my time in the photo course. She was more than happy to introduce us to many other artists and different techniques for the course around campus, as well as extended field trips in Midland and Odessa. In taking the course, it has also sparked an interest in pursuing my work. I even went out of my way to buy my own camera to continue photography as a hobby, she added. Casey has taken photos before, but with her smartphone, and had not had any professional direction in the art. I was incredibly humbled and surprised to be selected for the show with all the amazing and diverse talent in West Texas, Casey said. She added that she will absolutely pursue photography as a hobby, as I loved taking photographs prior to taking the course. I won't be taking any more photography courses in relation to my degree, as my current projected graduation is spring 2021. However, I may take courses in the future just to increase my knowledge of photography. Quick hits. Overeaters Anonymous. Overeaters Anonymous, a 12-step support group, has scheduled the following Zoom meetings. Sundays, 6 p.m., ID 964-152-377, passcode WEE. Mondays, noon, ID 420-773-870, passcode 061284. Wednesdays, 8 a.m., ID 338-141-943, passcode 026193. The meetings are free and open to the public. For more information, call 553-1031 or visit oa.org. Permian Basin Gives. Basin PBS has scheduled Permian Basin Gives fundraising event for 106 nonprofits from across the Permian Basin, August 25th. As part of the day's activities, Basin PBS will hold a two-hour telethon from 7 to 9 p.m. Giving days are designed for individual donors who may feel that the amount they could donate would be too small to have an impact. However, there's power in numbers, and area nonprofits will use Permian Basin Gives as an opportunity to encourage individual donors to make a bigger impact by giving at the same time. In addition, many of the agencies participating will have a donor to match all gifts made on through the Permian Basin Gives. For more information on participating agencies or to make a donation, visit www.permianbasingives.org. Volunteers needed. CASA of West Texas is in need of volunteers. For more information, call Hope Stalder at 432-683-1114, extension 16, or visit casawtx.org. Obituaries and death notices for Saturday, August 15th. Rosalio Zavala Gomez. Rosalio Zavala Gomez, Chalio of Odessa, passed away Monday, August 10th. He was born August 30th in 1955 in Matamoros, Coahuila. Rosalio is survived by his wife, Leticia Zavala, and his mother, Maria Zavala Gomez, his daughter, Norma Zavala, sons, Abraham Zavala and Jose Zavala, 7 grandchildren, 1 great-grandchild, brothers Juan Zavala, Roberto Zavala, Martin Rodriguez Gonzalez, sisters Natividad Zavala Gomez and Herminia Zavala Gomez. He is preceded in death by his father, Andres Zavala, and sister Rosalia Zavala Gomez. A viewing will be held Sunday, August 15th from 1 to 9 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home. A funeral service will be held Monday, August 17th at 12 noon at the House of Prayer, 2090 South Dixie, Odessa. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Joseph Eugene Matheny, Galveston, August 7th. Joseph Eugene Matheny passed away at the age of 59. Joe was born July 13th, 1961, in Odessa, to Thomas Matheny and Janine Coley. He is preceded in death by his father, Thomas. He is survived by his partner, Tom, mother Janine, stepfather George, sister Deborah, daughter Sarah, two grandchildren, nieces and nephews, and countless friends. A celebration of life was held with a candlelight vigil Friday, August 14th, a memorial visitation on Saturday, August 15th at his home in Galveston from 2 to 6 p.m. A memorial in Odessa will be held Sunday, August 23rd at 2 p.m. at Emmet HaTorah, 3319 North Golder. Flowers or donations may be sent to 1114 25th Street, Galveston, 77550. Death notices. Mary Brown. Mary Brown, 77, died Thursday, August 13th in Daphne. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Lyndon Jack Donahue. Lyndon Jack Donahue, 60, died Wednesday, August 12th in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Dolores Olivia Garule. Dolores Olivia Garule, 80, died Thursday, August 13th in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Patricia Harnden. Patricia Harnden, 92, of Odessa, died Wednesday, August 12th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Karen Ann Smith. Karen Ann Smith, 56, died Wednesday, August 12th in Crane. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Lourdes R. Soto. Lourdes R. Soto, 49, died Thursday, August 13th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, August 16th, 2020, Section A. Commentary. Health of Midlanders must be shared priority. By Russell Myers, Midland Health President and CEO, and Orlando Riddick, Midland ISD Superintendent. More than 2,000 years ago, the philosopher Virgil opined that health is wealth. In the modern era, Benjamin Franklin exhorted steps to make one healthy, wealthy, and wise. There is a reason health was viewed as a foundation supporting all other goods by these great thinkers. Without a healthy workforce, healthy schools, and a healthy healthcare system, many of our businesses cannot function. Absent a fully staffed or nearly fully staffed organization, the goods and services we rely on become increasingly difficult to produce. At the beginning of this month, Midland ISD made the difficult decision to prioritize the health of Midlanders above other goods. Providing a safe place during the day for your children is what we desire, and certainly providing an education and which prepares them for college, career, or the military is also good. It is the reason teachers work tirelessly day in and day out. But bringing thousands of children and teachers back together when science and facts indicate that doing so could be detrimental to their health did not serve in the greatest good as the decision was being made. At the beginning of this crisis, Midlanders saw us, along with Mayor Patrick Payton and Judge Terry Johnson, stand together in our unified command briefings. While those briefings became less frequent, the collaboration and information sharing continue. Our entities have remained in close contact, and we are aligned on the metrics that should be used as benchmarks toward a safe return to school and other normal activities. These metrics are positivity rate / community transmission and hospital capacity. since we are only testing individuals with symptoms or extreme exposures and not a cross-section of the whole community, we are unable to determine a true positivity rate. The daily count of positive tests represents a reasonable substitute for a community-wide positivity rate. These numbers continue to fluctuate as daily reports reflect data from several days prior, but overall seem to be declining. While COVID-19 hospitalizations have stabilized, which is a positive indicator, we need this to continue for the next several weeks. Our hospital's capacity to care for COVID patients remains adequate at current levels of community transmission. This is a consideration our community would be wise to take into account, recognizing that when large groups begin congregating again, we would expect hospitalizations and incidences of disease to increase. While children have represented a small portion of those infected, recent studies indicate that even the youngest among us can be carriers of substantial viral loads that can be transmitted to more vulnerable adults with whom they have contact. To those who are grieving the loss of back-to-school traditions or frustration in finding childcare, we hear you. We know this period is challenging us in ways like never before, and there are no easy answers. At the same time, you have far more power, far more agency than you might realize. Currently, the phrase, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, rings true. By wearing a mask or other face covering consistently, staying 6 feet apart from others, and washing our hands, we could slow the spread of COVID-19 in our community. The more people adopt these measures, the less community transmission we will see, the lower a hospitalization rate we will see, and prayerfully, the fewer deaths we will see. When these indications of health change, Midlanders can expect change in the school district's instructional model, with the potential to return students to classroom in a blended learning model earlier than 4 weeks, through a phased-in approach with our youngest and special education students returning first. We both agree that the best place for our children is in a classroom with their peers and a teacher. But we also agree that the health of this community must remain our shared priority. We are committed to continuing to work together to achieve these shared objectives, and we sincerely appreciate our community's support of this vital effort. Midland's new academic chief sees opportunity, not failure, by Stuart Doreen. S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. Midland ISD's new chief academic officer, Lisa Goodnow, doesn't see a district struggling with academic performance. She sees an opportunity. Goodnow has been reunited with Superintendent Orlando Riddick, for whom she worked at Cedar Hill ISD. However, her most recent position was with Austin ISD, where she served as an assistant superintendent for the past 2 years, overseeing multiple departments, including special ed, academics, social and emotional learning, multilingual, health services, and early childhood. Before that, she was executive director of academics and social and emotional learning. And in Midland, she sees a city with a smaller community feel, but one that is experiencing a bigger city complexity. And she said accountability instruments have exposed Midland ISD's learning gaps and pointed to areas where school officials need to focus. In the most recent Texas Education Agency ratings, the number of failing schools inside the district jumped to 9. This was more than most districts across the state. Even Goodnow's former Austin ISD home that has 81,000 students had fewer. I see that as an opportunity. I don't see it as a failure, Goodnow said. I think it's important to come with a strength-based approach, and that's how I've done it. I've overseen a school that was probably the second or third worst elementary school in the state. It took a little bit of time, and it was really hard, but it was attending to the social, emotional needs of students and making sure they are healthy, making sure that their well-being is taken care of, and making sure that they literally have social, emotional competencies, and that whatever crisis of trauma they might be in, we attend to that. First, you build the trust with your students, your teachers, and your families. And then you really do hone in with hope on academic success. Goodnell said academic achievement and growth are possible in a COVID-19 world, and her intention this year is to go back to the playbook she has said has served her well and attend to the social, emotional needs of our teachers, our administrators, our students, and our families first. Build that sense of community in our schools and extend it beyond to partnerships. And then we do really laser-like focus, analysis, and diagnosis, sort of, where kids are on their learning. Goodnell said, my eye is definitely on that accountability rating in spring 2022. Education. MISD reports 30% drop in staff departures by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. Midland ISD reported last week it had the lowest number of staff retiring or resigning in at least 5 years. The number of classroom teachers and certified licensed professionals leaving Midland ISD dropped by 30% compared to the 2018-19 year and dropped by 37% compared to the 2017-18 year, when nearly 500 staffers departed. The number of resignations and retirements this past school year was 308, which was down more than 130 year over year. The previous low mark during the last 5 years was in 2016-17, when 339 staff members left. Midland ISD reported that the top five reasons for separation were family obligations, spouse transfer, retirement, personal, and other educational employment. District efforts to increase retention are proving successful, said Woodrow Bailey, the district's chief of human capital management. Bailey acknowledged that other districts across the state are realizing a reduction in resignations and retirements because of the COVID-19 pandemic and families choosing not to move during this uncertain time. He said retention is aided by salary increases and an attractive benefit package, two-day care centers, the MISD health clinic, housing incentives made possible by groups like the Permian Strategic Partnership, moving stipends, and the health care plan funded by the district. Bailey expected at least 16 campuses to be fully staffed. He also said about 240 are expected at the orientation for new teachers. Last year, we started the year with certified teachers in 90% of the classrooms. This year, the number is 93%. He said principals are working on final additions and identifying long-term substitutes and staff members who are not certified but working toward a degree. He expects 96 coverage, and most openings left will be covered by current campus staff. The compensation and benefits have proven successful and enabled this significant accomplishment for our district. Higher retention rates directly impact student achievement, which supports our human capital goal to have high-quality talent delivering instruction in every classroom. Bailey also talked about a partnership between Midland ISD, Ector County ISD, the University of Texas Permian Basin, and a pair of national organizations that he said will help build a teacher pipeline into Midland, Odessa, and the rest of the Permian Basin. Opportunity Culture Partnership will mean 18 student teachers inside Midland ISD classrooms this year. 9 of those will be from UTPB, Bailey said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.